Listening Dog Media.
The Hot Mess Mum. The mum most likely to send her kids to school in regular clothes on non-school uniform day. The mum who forgets to sign the permission slip for school trips. The mum who has probably put leftovers in her kids' lunchbox on more than one occasion. But most importantly, the Hot Mess Mum is actually rocking it and is doing a far better job than even she thinks. Please welcome our Hot Mess Mums, telling it as it is, Kelly and Cherie.
It's the Hot Mess Mums Club Podcast Season 2. I'm Kelly Peck.
I'm Cherie Murphy.
And we are back.
Yes.
Woo, it feels like ages.
I know. We've had a nice break, though.
Yes. Well, we've been busy.
I know.
In bits of it, but
I know. We've still seen each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I feel ready for this.
Yay.
Looking forward to it. We've got some really nice guests, exciting guests coming on.
Yes.
But yeah, no, all good. Family, all good. Just carrying on, like just grinding along like we do.
Little Dolly ready for the Olympics, Cher?
Oh, gosh.
I am so jealous. She's been doing very well at gymnastics.
I know. She's been winning all kinds. Actually, it's a real surprise because I think sometimes you put them in these clubs and you just sort of hope they enjoy it.
Yeah. And they obviously end up quitting, like my daughter.
Yeah, which mine have quit. They've quit like ballet. They've quit, you know, tap dancing, drama. They've quit everything else. But this has seemed to have stuck. And the weekend just gone, she won a big, so she won, I don't know, she came first in, I don't even know what they are, I don't even know
Cherie.
What she does, I'm useless. So she came first in one thing and first in another, and then she won overall champion of 2019.
Fantastic. Well done, Dolly.
I know. And what about your two?
Oh, well, Ava Lily's just gearing up to go to prison eventually, you know, just being a normal, manipulative, naughty self. She's lovely. She's had a birthday. She's turned six. I know. So it's flown by.
Did she have a nice party?
She had a lovely party. Had about 20 kids in the garden.
Oh, my gosh.
A bouncy castle, a face painter.
Oh, she wanted the works then.
Yeah, and a lot of Prosecco. to get through it. My husband was like, why do you bother doing that? Why are we having them all here? What if it rains? But I just thought it'd be nice.
No, I think you have to do those parties. I mean, I've thrown a party for each of my kids. At one point, I've done a big party and then I'm like, I'm done. You all get in one party and that's it.
Oh.
And then it just goes to, you know, a couple of friends can come over or you go to the cinema.
Yeah, smaller things.
Yeah, but it's too many kids, too many parties.
It's a lot. And it's that whole thing of, are the parents going to stay or are they going to go?
Oh, I
know. Or
are
we going to have them all here?
Because it's entertaining the kids and the parents.
Yeah.
That's not my favourite bit.
Next year she'll want a smaller thing.
Yeah.
You know, where it's
a little elite crew.
Yes.
And what about Heath? How's he?
He's fine. He's lovely. Still at home. Haven't put him in nursery.
That's fine.
He's still biting. That's lovely. but yeah, he's scrumptious.
Oh, he good.
And I'm very broody, Cherie Murphy. But we'll talk about that maybe on another podcast. But I'm constantly at Mr. P about rolling over.
So well, you know my thoughts on that. I say go for it.
Yeah, I know. He definitely doesn't.
Don't tell him.
That, I know. But I'm thinking about it more and more. And it's got to the point where every time I see a baby on a train or the street, I just start thinking.
Well, then I think you've got to do it.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
I just want a baby.
Okay. We'll get into that on one of the podcasts. I'll convince you that you have to do it.
We've got an amazing guest on our first episode today. We're so, so excited to have this guy on. He's incredible. You'll have seen him on the TV as well. He's just brilliant. It's the Medicinal Chef.
Our Hot Mess Mums, telling it like it is, Kelly and Cherie.
So we are really, really excited. We wanted this guy on for, well, since we started this and it's now season two. It is the wonderful medicinal chef, aka Dale Pinnock.
Hi, how are you
Hello.
Doing?
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
No,
thank
thanks
you.
For agreeing to come on.
Yes.
We're very excited.
We're in a very hot and sticky office in London doing this. Cherie's literally just arrived.
Really, I'm not a fan of the hot weather in this country.
No.
It's great, you know, if you're lying on a beach or something, but when you've got to function normally and get on public transport.
That's
and
it.
Do your thing.
Well, we're up north as well, so it's always a few degrees cooler. So when you come up here, you feel like you're premenopausal, don't you? It's like,
you're like Betty Dawn.
Yeah, what's going on?
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. So we've got to talk about obviously your books, your TV show as well on ITV. I'm a big fan of yours. We cook your food in our house, and I was introduced to your food a couple of years ago by someone I work with, who was obsessed with your protein balls that you kept making.
Hey, get it all the time.
Your banana flapjacks.
Oh,
they're good. They are really good, and we love your chicken tray bake in our house. The kiddies eat that as well. They
it's
love
so simple,
it.
Simple, isn't it? It's one of those things. You throw it together, bung it in the oven. You can do other stuff.
Yes.
You don't worry about it.
So it's really taken off for you, hasn't it, with the TV show?
Yeah. has, yeah. Long time coming. Crikey O'Reilly. But got there in the end.
The TV show's great because you're sort of turning people's lives around and showing, we were talking about this earlier, how simple it is to eat healthy and you don't have to spend a fortune, because people do think healthy food costs more.
Well, the premise of the show really is that we work with a different family each week that wants to eat healthier, but they come up against the usual hurdles that people claim to have, whether it's not enough time. I mean, nettle chestnut comes up a lot.
Yep.
Lack of confidence in the kitchen or lack of skill in the kitchen, fussy eaters, financial constraints, the usual things that most people will see as a barrier. And then it's up to us to actually find a way around it. And there's always a way around it. With a little bit of thought, think outside the box, get creative. You can always find ways to improve your situation. And what we always try and drum home is that it's not about perfection. Perfection doesn't exist. I mean, you kind of, if you live in like the Instagram world, you see people with these perfect diets and all this. Oh, look what I have for breakfast, lunch and dinner. It's not about that. It's small, simple changes and tweaks that you can make every day consistently just to improve things as best you can.
When you turn things around with a family, say if you're going into people's homes and, you know, you show them simple, and it is sometimes, you break it down, and cooking, I feel, from scratch is pretty simple. You just have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
Do people, once you do turn their lives around, because it is life-changing sometimes when it comes to food and families and everything else, do they sort of always say, God, I didn't realise it was this easy?
Yes, oh, that comes up all the time. It's like, is that all I do?
Yeah. And it's crazy that I suppose in this day where food is a massive part of, you know, life, with social media.
Yeah, we're in a real strange time at the minute where I always knew that nutrition would become quite a mainstream thing, because once people actually realise that it's a way in which we can actively engage in our own healthcare, it's a way in which we can take on a certain amount of responsibility, then of course people will adopt it. But weirdly, it became strangely entangled with fashion and with aspirational lifestyles. Yeah. I mean, how the hell has kale become aspirational? What kind of alternate reality are we in? But it has. But with that has come a lot of faddism, has come a lot of nonsense, has come a lot of, unless, you know, we all know how the media works, right? There's a lot of it where people are sometimes thrust into the spotlight because they look a certain way. Who gives a monkey's if they've got an education in the subject whatsoever, but because they look cracking in a set of yoga pants and they can hold a green drink really, really well, the press are all over them. And we need to actually make a lot of noise about the evidence base that is there for nutrition.
Are you amazed people still, you know, in this day and age, buy into that, though?
It's changing. Thankfully, it is changing. I mean, the thing that concerns me the most is that it's still the younger audience that are kind of sucked in by all of that. And, you know, they're the ones that are the most impressionable. And with, you know, growing and developing bodies, you really don't want to be monkeying around with your diet too much. So that does worry me. I think certainly, you know, people within our generation, they kind of see it for what it is and are demanding more of an evidence base. And I think that's why things have really started to change for people like myself. I mean, I did my first undergrad was in human nutrition, did a second undergrad in herbal medicine just to learn a bit more about plant biochemistry. Then I did a master's in nutritional medicine at Surrey. So actually took the time to study the subject. And we realise how little we know about the subject because it's such a new science. It's such a difficult science to do really, really well. And, you know, it's good to see that there is that demand for an evidence base now. And people are actually, now they've realised that this stuff actually makes a difference. Mm. This stuff actually works. There's things that they can do for themselves to engage in their own healthcare. They're seeking out better quality information now.
And your story sort of started from yourself as a young boy. You had sort of problem skin, and that's why you kind of got into nutrition and trying to find out how to combat that, what to eat.
I was about 10 or 11. It was the summer of leaving primary school to go up to secondary school, that time in your life when you just start to become conscious of yourself in relation to your peers. So I started secondary school looking like I'd been shot in the face with a blunderbuss.
Oh,
it
no.
was awful. And you know what little sods kids can be? I mean, I didn't get the best of times when I was at school. I can only thank God that the internet didn't exist and social media didn't exist when I was at school.
Well, aren't we all back?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The stuff we got up to. Yeah. Come on.
Thank goodness. The 90s, yeah.
So what made you get into it then?
I went to every conceivable specialist, doctor, tried every manner of lotion and potion. The only thing I didn't do was Roaccutane, which is the really hardcore liver-punishing medication. That was the only one I didn't have. I had all the topical treatments and the oral antibiotics and all that kind of stuff. Nothing really made much of a difference. 15 years old, sat around at my friend's house one night, feeling sorry for myself, and his mum came up to me and she gave me this book, and it was a book called Fit for Life by Harvey Diamond, which was like a proper old-school 80s... like fad diet book, really, or food combined in a fruit in the morning, all that kind of stuff. And she said, look, unless you sort out what's going on the inside, nothing's going to change on the outside. And obviously as a 15-year-old boy, I was like, oh, whatever. But I was so desperate at that point. If someone would have told me to go out in the garden at midnight wrapped in tinfoil and that it would work, I would have tried it. So I took this book and I read this thing cover to cover at a weekend, and that was the light bulb moment where all of a sudden I was like, hang on, we can actually play a role to one degree or another in our own health destiny. You know, we don't have to just, it's not a passive process. We don't just have to sit there and just take a medication and be like, well, that didn't work, then I'm stuck with it. We can engage in this process. And that was it. I was completely hooked. I was searching for the answer, obviously, so I read so many different books. As you know, as we were saying before we started recording, I read over 1,000 books in the first year. I was a nerd. You see, the amount of books at home, my car is... I've not started my car since December. But it's full. It's full of books. If I open the back door, it'll spill out all on the floor. My office is full of books. Everything's full of books. I just read these things cover to cover. Used myself as a guinea pig. Put myself in hospital twice. That's a conversation for another day. And just... was just obsessed with the subject. I tried every diet that's going from raw food diet to macrobiotics to vegan to paleo, tried all of it just so I could experience it firsthand and learn all the nuances that are associated with it.
Which I suppose you'd have to, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
if you
completely.
Are, you know, believing in this and selling it as your, you know, you've got to have tried everything, haven't you? So you can have an answer or a theory or some sort of, you know...
Just the experiential thing as well. I mean... It's all well and good looking at theory, looking at something on paper.
Yeah.
But when you've actually lived something, you've got a very, very different perspective.
Got your own experience of it.
So that was important. And I mucked about the whole time I was at school, so I didn't really have many qualifications to speak of. But at that point, I realised that nothing else kind of really animated me or had captured my passion in the way that this did. So I went and did like my access course and caught up and got to where I should have been. And then, went off to university, and that was it. I was just hooked.
One of the things that we've been really wanting to ask you is we want to talk about fussy eaters and kids. Both Cherie and I have two that are very fussy.
I've got two that are very fussy in my family.
Dolly.
Dolly and Matilda, yeah. So Dolly's 7. Now, she's a great eater, as in she will try everything.
Yeah.
You know, she'll give it a go at least. But there's certain things. She hates a roast dinner. Cannot stand roast dinners. Yeah. And it's just got to that point where my husband, for an easy life, because he likes cooking, and he does make everything from scratch, he just said, oh, just give in, because she's the youngest of four.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't do that. You can't just give in to her. Do you know what I mean? The one that's 11, who I would have thought would, you know, get a bit better now that she's sort of about to go to high school and everything like that, is a terrible eater. Like, everything is basic, and if she could have ketchup on anything, she would. And it's trying to get... I mean, I know from the older ones, as they've got older, because Kelly's are still young, you know, and it's that hair-pulling moment, isn't it, where you just think, what am I going to do?
Oh.
How am I going to cope with it? I know that they do grow out of it eventually, but it's for mums out there that have got little ones and haven't got older ones. It's so difficult.
It's very difficult. Yeah. I mean, Ava Lily's a night, but she's nearly 6, and she's really picky to the point where we cook different dinners in our house. So we'll have the healthy stuff, and she will order. She'll say, "I want a pizza that night. I want a Pizza Express." You know, we end up. My little boy's 18 months. He'll eat anything. He's so good. She's complete. And I fed her from scratch, everything homemade. I was so strict with her. With Heath, I've let him have a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And he's a completely different eater to her. So it's my fault, I think. But what do you do with the Dollies and the Ava Lilies of this world?
Every single child is different. And it is trial and error. But some of the things that have certainly been quite well researched, the first one is actually getting them involved in cooking the meal. There's a lot of trials been done with this, actually. And it seems to be like it becomes like an outcropping of their creative expression. and they get an emotional investment in that actual end product.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Actually getting them involved in cooking, it's like, right, what should we do next? What should we put in it? You know, let them actually have a part to play
right.
in the preparation of this meal, and suddenly the emotional investment is there.
I should do that more. Yeah, do you know I'm terrible?
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I was thinking, the bloody mess. Like, she'll say, can I do this? And I'll look at Chris and my husband and think, oh, God.
Yeah, you just want to get dinner over with, don't
yeah,
you?
But I should probably no, take it's that true, step back and say...
Because then, like, it's, you know, they'll be involved.
I suppose it's like anything. I know if we've put seeds, you know, in the garden or something, they are invested in going out there, watering them, checking them.
Exactly.
So it does make sense, doesn't it? Or if you're doing a project or a little experiment and they always want to run down the next morning to see how it is, you know, and what's happened to
anything creative they do, whether it's a picture or something, they want to bring it home and present it to you. There's that real strong emotional connection there. So absolutely play on that natural tendency. That's one thing. Also, you can sometimes move into the more hoodwinking side of things.
Right.
So, say for example, if you've tried everything else, nothing else works, and they'll only eat pasta and tomato sauce, that's your place to start. Okay. So, with that, I try and find different ways to hide things in places. So, with the pasta sauce, that is the easiest thing in the world, and pizza as well, easiest thing in the world. You get garlic, red onions, red peppers, courgette, spinach, aubergine, all of that. Saute it, stew it down till it's nice and soft. Add tomato passata, so like the sieved tomatoes to it.
Yeah.
Simmer it for a few minutes, then puree it. Looks, tastes, smells, feels just like a tomato sauce, but there's all of these veg in there.
That's great.
You don't tell them anything.
No.
Yeah,
so you just put it in there.
I think the blender was my best friend, actually. Yeah. When my two oldest ones were toddlers, the blender literally was my... I used to blend everything, but then it got to a point where I thought, I can't keep giving them blended food. This is getting ridiculous. They're going to have to go on the hard stuff.
The smoothie bar, yeah.
But it was a brilliant sort of... You could hide so many different veg in it.
Because sometimes it's just the texture.
Yeah.
It's the texture. I mean, a perfect example of this was on series one of Eat Shop Safe. There was a little girl called Fallon. She was amazing, amazing little character. I loved her to bits. But she wasn't particularly varied in what she would eat. You know, she knew what she liked, and that was it. Anything that kind of deviated, and, you know, there was a hell to pay. But one of the things that she did really, really like was a chicken curry. So we were like, okay, start with what they like, and let's go from there. I made what, in essence, was really like an extra thick sweet potato soup. So the onions, the garlic, sweet potatoes, vegetable stock, simmer it, puree it. And then I added turmeric, cumin, ground coriander, garam masala, a little bit of mild curry powder to that. So it became like a curry sauce, added the chicken into it, cooked the chicken into it, and it came out just like a chicken korma. She got 2/3 of the way through, and it's like, do you know you're eating sweet potatoes? She was like, but it tastes really, really good. It's like, well, who said you had to have it just as mash?
And who says sweet potatoes don't taste good?
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't they like get it into sweet their potatoes, head, don't they? So kids do not. It was the first food
I know some
I
that
ever
love.
Gave both of mine, and they just will not. Eat it.
I know some that absolutely love it. I think it's maybe one of those Marmite things.
Yeah.
Because it is a bit weird. It's
but hiding
it's sweet.
It like
it's
that like, is a great idea.
Yeah it and is. It's great. I mean, sweet potato in desserts as well. My words. Like sweet potato brownies and stuff like that.
And I've got a teenager, a 16-year-old, who has very problematic skin. She's got she's tried everything apart from like what you said, the really hard stuff. She's been on some sort of tablet, tried all sorts of lotions and potions. And she is very conscious of what she eats, and she does eat healthy. I mean, she likes the odd bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's just not, doesn't seem to be clearing up. Now, I don't know if it's like a hormonal thing because of her age.
There's going to be that. And is her cycle all normal? There's no.
Yeah, it is.
Because sometimes if there's cycle abnormalities, they can just have a little bit higher than normal androgen levels. So the testosterone is just a bit too high. Some extra zinc might be helpful.
Okay.
So zinc in the diet either as a supplement or from foods like prawns, pumpkin seeds, walnuts, those kind of things. Because zinc will do several things. It will actually help to break down excess testosterone in women. In men, it's got more to do with testosterone metabolism and formation, but in women, any excess, it can help to actually break it down. It helps to regulate the sebaceous glands.
Okay.
So zinc regulates the rate at which sebum is actually released from the sebaceous glands. But most importantly, zinc is used by our white blood cells to code genes that regulate how these white blood cells respond to active infection, and acne is active infection of the pilosebaceous unit.
Yeah.
So it will help to clear the infection faster.
Okay.
So about 15 milligrams of zinc daily okay. It will help, be helpful
thank
for us.
Thank you.
Never more than 15, though.
Okay, never more than 15. Okay. I'm making a note of that.
Yeah, so you can just get that in a tiny little capsule. You can just take it once a day.
I know, because it is, very like helpful. You say, when you're your age and you're going to high school, and it is...
It's a nightmare.
It's just awful. Yeah. She doesn't like wearing makeup or anything like that, and she kind of just rides with it, but I feel so sorry for her.
I would say a low glycemic diet as well. There's a lot of evidence to show that very, very high glycemic diets can actually cause the ovaries to produce higher than normal levels of androgens as well.
Okay.
And there is strong links between high glycemic diets and PCOS
later on. So what would be in a high glycemic diet?
So high glycemic is lots of carbohydrate.
Right, she loves carb.
Right, rein that in a little bit.
Okay.
To rein that in and like build a diet around healthy fats, good quality proteins and non-starchy vegetables. And talking of the good fats, omega-3 fatty acids can work wonders.
Okay.
Because one of the things that the omega-3 fatty acids will do is, I mean, you know, they play several roles in the body. I mean, they play structural roles, but the main thing that they do is actually provide the building blocks for a lot of communication compounds in the body. One of the main things that they are the building blocks for are a group of compounds called prostaglandins. Now, I'll be testing you on this article. Prostaglandins. Now, prostaglandins...
It's been a long time since I've had a lecture like this. These big words, come on.
Just wait. Just wait.
I'm kids all day. Yeah.
Once you go down the rabbit hole, you might need a strong coffee.
It's fascinating.
But prostaglandins, these are communication molecules. They regulate some aspects of smooth muscle contraction. So they're the things that are involved in menstrual cramps and also certain aspects of vascular dynamics as well. But the main thing that they do is regulate the inflammatory response. You've got three types of prostaglandin: series 1, series 2, series 3. Series 1 is mildly anti-inflammatory. Series 3 are aggressively anti-inflammatory. Then series 2 are aggressively pro-inflammatory. So they make inflammation worse. Whereas the series 3, these really push inflammation down. With acne or any kind of inflammatory skin condition, that active redness, that's inflammation.
Yeah.
So omega-3, either via oily fish or a good quality supplement, will actually start to force the body to express more of those series 3 prostaglandins and start pushing inflammation down. It doesn't take away the lesion, but it makes it much less red and angry, so it looks better.
Yeah.
So you combine that with zinc that actually accelerates the rate at which the immune system will deal with the infection. You can actually clear the breakouts faster.
Wow. They need you in schools. You know,
I know.
Jamie went over to America for the obesity. We need you in there doing stuff like that, because the amount of teenagers that go through it.
The amount that will actually take on the information, though, that might be...
I bet they would, you know, because I know that my daughter is at that age. I think possibly when they get to sort of, you know, mid sort of teenage years, I think they would take it in, most definitely, because I think some kids are so desperate.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's exactly... Yeah,
they are so desperate to... Yeah, like you were... to find a solution for it. And it becomes, and that's when bullying gets involved, especially with social media. Like, my daughter won't put any pictures of herself on social media because, I mean, she's not really like that anyway. She's not into taking selfies, but she's embarrassed of her skin. So, you know, you just feel for them. And I don't want her to go on, you know, hormones and stuff like that. I'd rather her be, like you say, healthy from the inside.
Yeah. The thing is, it will settle down.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Maybe within the next sort of 2 to 3 years it'll settle down. But there is a lot that she can do just to take the edge off it and just to help it to sort itself out a little bit faster and look a bit
thank
better.
Thank you.
Got to get listen to this podcast.
I will, don't worry.
I'll be making notes. Of it, just listen.
Yes.
You've got an exciting new project coming up as well, haven't
you? Yes, absolutely.
So tell us a bit about that.
So I've just launched a new course, okay? I realised a few years ago that there's a need for a new type of education now. There's a lot of people that are really, really interested in nutrition that don't want to train as a nutritionist. They don't want to do 3 or 4 years at university doing a degree, but they don't just want to do some kind of 5-minute course that's like, this is a carbohydrate. You know, they want something that's got a little bit more depth to it and how to apply it, but without that kind of time investment. And also with the shake-up in the NHS now, what a lot of you probably would have realised by now is that your local GP's surgeries have all come under the same name.
Yeah.
So all the ones in that area. That's called a primary care network, and that's how the NHS is changing. Within each primary care network, there's going to be between 1 and 4 link workers. And a link worker is someone who's like the interface for social prescribing. This is a new initiative by the NHS, social prescribing, where the link worker will work between the GP, the patient, and what's available in the local area that will support the patient's healthcare. So, you know, they send patients to art classes, meditation classes, exercise classes, healthy cooking classes.
Rather than just give them medication. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the medication is part of it, but this is like the what happens when they leave the surgery.
Yeah.
This is what they can do in their day-to-day life. And there is now a need for a new type of professional that can actually help people in this situation to cook healthier food, but be able to teach them why it's healthier and why it's going to be benefiting them. So they're not clinical practitioners. They're people that are out in the field actually helping people to make meaningful, significant change in their life. So I've developed a diploma in culinary medicine. It's accredited by three professional bodies. People can get insurance to work as soon as they've actually graduated. And it's 100% online. There's no time limits. You can, you know, you could take 10 weeks or 10 years to do it. It's completely up to you. And yeah, so that's just
fantastic.
Yeah, culinarymedicinecollege.com.
That's brilliant.
And it is about education, isn't it? I was saying, you know, I think in schools they need to perhaps do more as well. You don't hear so much about the cooking, but everybody needs to learn to cook. It's daft, isn't it?
But yeah, it is.
I don't know how to cook.
It's not necessarily a cooking school. I mean, the assignments are recipe based, but people aren't being assessed on the recipes. It's actually being able to demonstrate that they know how to apply the theory. You know what? The amount of people that have actually signed up that are just doing it for their own interest or so they can cook healthier stuff for the family. So it just goes to show that there is this demand for a better quality of information from people now.
Absolutely. When's the TV show back on? You're doing season
three? So season three starts on the 1st of August, 8 p.m. ITV1. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, we're on a later time slot now. We were sort of sandwiched between the two Emmerdale episodes, but now we're on the back of the second one on the Thursday night.
The prime time, that's brilliant.
It's a nice slot,
It's prime time, that's a good slot.
And any families out there kind of struggling with the budget and everything, that's what it's all geared up
it
to.
It is,
really.
Yeah. So we show you how to make simple changes that anyone can make to eat healthier, to save money, and we've got Tom in there as well that shows you simple fitness, like things that you can do just to start getting fitter. Doesn't mean go to the gym, you can just do stuff at home.
Just bits around the house.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. It's been so nice having you.
It's been so nice to be here.
Can we cancel everyone else and just keep Dale with us today?
Please.
I feel like it just started.
I know.
We're just getting warmed up.
We kept you half an hour because we were late. I'm so sorry.
So sorry.
Oh, thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Dale.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's been lovely.
I have to come back.
Yes,
do it again.
Yes, please.
We'll do the part two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hot Mess Mums.
I can't wait to see him on the TV when he comes back on with the show. I love it.
I know, it's a brilliant show.
What a great, great guy to have on. Next week, we've got a brilliant guest as well. We can't wait for this one. She was on Celebrity Big Brother. You'll often see her popping up on Piers Morgan and this morning having a lively debate. It is the gorgeous India Willoughby.
Yes.
Going to be with us next week talking all things Hot Mess Mum. So join us then.